This is The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
On the show, we'll share innovative strategies, expert insights, and success stories from industry leaders across the world.
You'll learn everything you need to turn your contact centre into a strategic value centre, where interactions become memorable experiences. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Hope.
Today, we're talking to Dan Yetzi, the former General Manager of Customer Services at David Jones and the Country Road Group. Dan is an influential voice in the contact center industry with a passion for creating meaningful interactions with customers.
In this episode, Dan shares his experience working in the retail industry and what makes retail contact centers unique. Dan breaks down what seamless omnichannel experiences are, how they benefit customers and contact centers alike. And Dan shares his biggest tips for anyone looking to streamline their omnichannel experiences. Let's jump in.
Welcome to the show, Dan. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Arnie. Great to be here.
You've just recently finished up with David Jones and the Country Road Group. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role was there?
I worked at David Jones for 25 years, and I had started my career there in stores as a sales manager and worked my way up to a store manager and did that role for a few years and then went into head office. And I had the opportunity to do all sorts of different roles across projects, marketing, corporate partnerships. So really great experience. And I think that's one of the reasons why I stayed there for so long. And then about 4 years ago, I was tapped on the shoulder and my manager at the time said to me, "We want you to be General Manager of Customer Services for David Jones and Country Road Group." I said, "Look, that's really great, but I've been a customer service manager for David Jones 10 years ago. I've been there, done that. Don't need to do it again, thanks. I don't need to answer any more complaints." Basically, the tone changed. I said, "No, you're going to do this." I went, "Oh, okay." And at the time, we were in a really interesting situation. David Jones was in the final stages of relocating its head office from Sydney to Melbourne, and the contact centre was the last group left. At the time, the decision had been made by the company to actually outsource the customer service function for both David Jones and Country Road Group. So clearly there was an opportunity there that had been identified to save cost. You know, retailers typically run off the smell of an oily rag, so any opportunity to save cost, particularly for a department store, it's going to be looked at favourably. And it was interesting because I thought, oh, I don't know that I really want to manage an outsourced customer service function. That doesn't sound very interesting. And also what I was really worried about was actually, well, is that the right thing for our customers? David Jones is a brand that's, you know, 175 years old and is proud of its Australian heritage. Country Road Group, all of the brands under there are all Australian iconic brands. And they're both really proud of their service. So it seemed to me there was this bit of a disconnect, but we had a bigger problem at David Jones. We just replatformed the website and it was really unstable. And it was the customer service and the contact center team that actually was holding that glue together, so to speak. So they were the ones that were seeing the problems the customers were identifying or experiencing on the website. And then actually being the first to tell IT, "Hey, we've got an issue here with this particular functionality. How do we fix it?" And then more importantly, they were able to rectify the situation for each customer really quickly. And it was the IP that we had in the team that we realized was really, really valuable. And that if we had outsourced it, well, those problems would have, for the most part, bounced back to us anyway. So it was then that a call was made that, hey, let's look at, see if we can identify a way of keeping customer service in-house and keeping that IP in the business and ultimately providing a better service for customers. And I was a bit naive. I didn't come from a customer or contact center background, so I didn't realize that there was this trend that was starting to happen about companies and organizations bringing customer service back in-house. So clearly, must have had to be a bit of ESP or something there. But ultimately, yeah, I firmly believe it was absolutely the right decision to keep it in-house. So that's what I did for the last few years and, you know, had a really exciting time. And now I've caught the bug. You know, I think I'm stuck with customer service and contact centers now for the rest of my career.
It is a bug. How do you describe that bug? Why is it hard to get away from?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think if I reflect back on when I last worked in customer service, and it's 14 or 15 years ago now, and at the time I helped set up the first contact center for David Jones. It wasn't really a contact center, but that's what we called it. So much has changed in that time in terms of technology and how it can help transform the customer experience. So my first stint with customer service, majority of our customers actually, embarrassed to say this, actually wrote letters to us. And if it was a handwritten letter with kittens or flowers on the stationery, we knew that was a good letter. But if it was typed or block letters, we knew, oh, okay, this is going to be a complaint. We were still getting faxes, and email was the brand new channel that was starting to change things. And we'd get maybe a handful of calls a day. Fast forward 15 years, and interestingly, David Jones hadn't really invested a lot in technology in the meantime. But when the decision that we had made to keep customer service in-house, the reason we were able to do that was by replatforming all of our systems in our customer service tech stack. And the decision that we'd made was to go with Amazon Connect. And so we were able to introduce bots and AI to help automate some of those journeys and really transform how customers started engaging with the brand. And we're able to accelerate that, obviously, as a result of COVID through the following years. So for me, what I'm really excited about now is how the contact center and AI can help break down the silos that exist between the customer, the contact center, and in a retail context, the bricks and mortar stores. And, you know, it should be a no-brainer, and retailers, like, they describe themselves as omnichannel, but they're really not. I don't know if either of you have had the experience, but you might be browsing online, for example, and you see a shirt that you like, and, you know, you might have a couple of questions about it. You might go onto live chat. The agent might know a little bit about it, but typically the people with the experience and the product knowledge are in our stores. So the traditional journey up to now has been, well, the customer will go, oh, great, well, can I get some information from somebody in store? And we go, well, you have to ring them. So automatically that conversation breaks down. Traditionally, the team members in stores haven't had access to that single view of customer because they haven't had a device or the technology to be able to do that. But also as a customer, if you try and ring a retailer, 50% of the time they don't answer the phone. And it's not because they're rude. It's just that they're busy serving the customer in front of them or doing stock work or so on. So inadvertently have all of these barriers that we put up. But now with AI and just generally contact center technology, there's a real opportunity to smash those barriers and create this seamless omnichannel customer conversational commerce journey as well.
I can really feel the energy from you when you started talking about that. Can you take us to the beginning? How did you get started in the contact center world?
Rolling the clock back 10, 15 years when I first was in this space, we set up what we called a contact center for David Jones, and its main role was to actually operate as the switchboard for the company. So back then, the way customers got information was through stores, and typically, you know, other than walking into a store and asking a salesperson there, they would ring us. We centralized all of that, and the calls would come through to the contact center, and the team member would ask the customer, what store, what brand, what department do you need? They'd push that call through. Half the time that call wouldn't get answered, so it would bounce back, and the agent would then have to try and figure out an alternate extension and ultimately, if that didn't work, they would end up putting the call through to a department manager or a store manager, which, you know, they were never terribly fond of receiving those calls. If we fast forward back to my most recent stint in customer service, the phone calls into David Jones stores were still the biggest source of contact. And we identified, well, that was where most of the cost was coming from. So we decided if we could automate that using natural language processing and conversational AI, that would probably be a bit of a game changer. So the new journey was you'd ring up a central number. We eliminated all of the store phone numbers and all the other extraneous numbers. So you just had one telephone number for David Jones. The voice bot would say, welcome to David Jones. How can I help you? Interestingly, most customers just didn't say anything. They went, okay, what's happening there? So it became very clear to us that we had to bring customers along the journey with us. So we added a few more prompts, like you can ask to talk to a store or you can check your order status. So then going down that talk to a store journey, it would say, what store were you after? What department? What brand? Or you could just say, I'm after the Chanel counter in Bourke Street Mall. And it would no. And then say, is it Chanel Beauty or Chanel sunglasses? So a really cool solution. Unfortunately, what we didn't really realize was that, well, the store was still wasn't going to answer the phone half the time. So the calls would bounce back and we actually weren't really delivering any cost savings. And I think we're only deflecting about 20% of the calls. So we had to work on that quite a bit over the following months to really improve the ability of the bot to understand the customer, but then also realize we've got to look at this whole situation completely differently as well. So I'll come to that a bit later. But we automated some other intents. So where's my order was the biggest inquiry into the online customer service team. So the solution did a number of API calls to Salesforce Record, our order management system, our delivery partner. So it could say, Arnie, sorry, that order for the blue shirt is running 3 days late. You'll receive it in a few days' time. Did you still want to speak to somebody? Yes or no? So it was a very personalized experience. But back then also it kind of freaked customers out because, again, if you rang, when you did ring rather, the solution would look up your phone number. And if you had a record with us, it would actually greet you by name. We didn't realize how far ahead of the game we were at the time. So the big learning was you've got to bring all of your stakeholders along with you. And that includes your customers. You know, they need a bit of education. They don't trust initially, or they didn't trust at the time, this new technology. I think they're more willing to try it now, but there's still this trust factor. You know, if I try this, is somebody going to actually answer my inquiry, or are they going to be able to know what to do? About 3 weeks after we finished the rollout, trained a new team in Melbourne and you know, everything was going great, we actually had our first COVID case before kind of the rest of the country kind of went into lockdown. So overnight, we had to start working virtually. And I don't know what, you know, I had done in a previous life, but we'd had the sense to the day before to, oh, let's just test the work from home solution because we'd not tested it. So we had about 5 team members from David Jones, 5 from Country Road Group. We said, take your computers home with you, log in, let's just test and see if it works. And well, thank God we did that because those 10 people were keeping the ship afloat for a couple of days while we could sort everybody else out. So thank goodness we went down that road of doing all of that replatforming because if we hadn't, I still think we'd be answering the calls from 3 years ago, that we'd still have that queue. So it was, you know, very good timing. And ironically, I remember when we were building the business case for this, and you know, we needed a huge amount of CapEx. It was this big project. And I was selling the idea to people going, oh, you know, so we'll be able to deliver this personalized service and a team member can take a laptop home and answer calls at home. And people said, well, why would they want to do that? I mean, I don't know. They might break their leg. They can't get the tram to work or something. So I felt very smug afterwards when I said, well, this is why we needed to do it. I didn't know it at the time, but there was a reason. And ultimately, it was the, you know, we were very lucky that we went down that road.
You should definitely just claim it. Just claim it. Yeah, you saw the pandemic coming and that's why.
I think I've got a bit of ESP. I don't know. So who knows?
Hey, Dan, your background is obviously, you know, very deeply in retail contact center space and retail more broadly. Can you tell us briefly how is working in a retail-based contact center different to working in a regular contact center?
Good question. And having not worked in a regular contact center, I can only speculate. But based on the experience that we had in setting up this new contact center for David Jones, because we had to recruit and train at the time 75 new team members. Once COVID hit, we suddenly had to expand the size of the team. And we thought, great, we'll get some people who've got some contact center experience. And they started, you know, we had a couple of team leaders, a few agents, and they came from backgrounds like finance, airlines, that sort of thing. We put them on the phones at the time and they really struggled. It wasn't, they could do the job, clearly, they'd been doing it for a number of years. Where retailers, where David Jones and Country Road Group at least differ, I guess, is that yes, we've got policies and we need to abide by it, but ultimately our philosophy is, well, you've got to do the right thing by the customer and the right thing by the company. So yes, a customer may have worn this jacket 300 times, but you know what? She spent $50,000 a year with us. We'll take that into account. Whereas these team members that have joined us from these other contact centers were, you know, used to a very black and white approach. And also we weren't really that hung up on average handling time. We said if it takes 10 minutes to answer a call, it takes 10 minutes to have that conversation with the customer. I think culturally there were some real differences, but reflecting on that also, I think maybe one of the other challenges that a retail or contact center has, as opposed to say a bank or a telco, is the range of products that we have to deal with. Over the last years, the role of the contact center has really changed. It used to be this reactive service model with the bulk of the inquiries being always my order. And over the last few years, it's really transformed into being a proactive, almost customer engagement center, where we're helping customers choose products, we're giving them advice, and we're helping them transact. So that's a very different skill set. But if you think about the product, the range of products that a retailer, particularly a department store, sells, it's thousands, if not tens of thousands. And they change monthly, seasonally, annually. You get new brands coming in, brands going out. So it's a real challenge to kind of build that product knowledge within a contact center. It's probably not actually feasible. So that's where the opportunity is, where you've got people in stores. If you can connect that customer and, you know, the contact center can triage that inquiry and then push that inquiry to using skills-based routing to the right person in the right store, whether it's through live chat or telephony or asynchronous messaging, that's the big unlock there that can solve that problem. So I think that's probably the main difference, but that's just based on my personal experience.
Yeah, I really like that. It's making it almost invisible that you've got these different touch points, because the customers really aren't that concerned, are they? They just want the outcome or the service to be really, really good. So it also, to me, highlights the value of knowing your customers really well, or your employees knowing who your customers are really well and what they need. So that's, yeah, great description for us.
You touched on it a bit earlier, Daniel. I feel like we really need to get into it. The phrase seamless, you know, omni-channel experience. And it feels like it's something we're seeing a lot in the industry at the moment. Can you explain to us just as simply as you can what a seamless omni-channel experience is?
Absolutely. The way customers engage with brands and in particular retailers, and I'll talk retail because that's my game, it's really changed. And when I used to work in stores, customers would come into the store and they would rely on the salesperson on the selling floor to give them the information that they needed. So if we take the example of, say, buying a mattress, customer come in and they ask the salesperson, which is the right mattress for me? You know, this is kind of what I'm looking for. Salesperson would explain the differences, recommend one, happy days. So it's a very linear kind of process and very simple. As online for retail grew, and you know, we really saw this accelerate through the pandemic, we really started seeing customers kind of hop across multiple channels as part of their shopping purchase. So they might start that journey online, and it might be with the retailer itself, might be on social, they've seen a product that maybe an influencer is talking about or whatever. They're doing all of that research. They then start browsing online. They might ask a few questions in live chat about the product. So for example, what's the sleeve length on this jacket? I'm a size 30 in this brand. What size would I be in this particular brand? So there's sorts of kinds of questions that we might get. One of the best questions we ever had, it's actually a country road, was we had a range of pet kind of products, and the customer said, I'm looking at this dog jacket. Does it fit a chihuahua? Who knew, right? But they're the kinds of questions that you get. But then now what starts happening is that the customer might then go, okay, great, I'm going to go, I'll be at that store tomorrow. I'll just go in and check and pick it up and happy days. Or they might say, whilst they're online, look, you know what? Can you tell me a bit more about this product? Or what's how many pockets are in the inside of that jacket? And this is a situation where that person in store's got the information. They might actually need to take a photo of the product, or, for example, and send it to the customer. So, again, you want to be able to seamlessly connect that customer with the right person in the right store. Or the other big inquiry we really started seeing now, particularly once lockdowns were over, was if a customer was going to make a journey to a physical bricks and mortar store, she wanted to make sure that journey wasn't wasted. So if she was going to buy a dress, for argument's sake, and she could see that online that the system was showing that there were two in Chadstone store, for example, she might validate that with the team member in the contact center. But then when she goes there, she absolutely wants to make sure that that dress doesn't get sold. So what she would start doing now is, whilst chatting to the team member in the contact center, saying, great, can you put it on hold for me? And again, we'd say, well, you have to ring the store. So we actually started exploring how we could facilitate that process and keep it as seamless as we could. So there were two things that we had tried. One was live chat, and we did this really well during lockdown where the stores were in dark mode, but we still had team members working there. We did a really interesting thing. This was at David Jones, where customers were asking the contact center team about product recommendations. So one of the classic questions we had was a customer saying, I'm a 50-year-old woman, what's the best eye cream for me? Now, a lot of the team members I had in the contact center were 18-year-old students, whatever. You know, they've never used an eye cream, right? And God love them, they would try and they go, oh, yeah, we've got this La Prairie one. It's $500 a jar. It's the best one. And, you know, customers go, okay, great, you know. But we thought, okay, there's an opportunity to really leverage the people in the stores who weren't, they had the availability, they weren't serving customers. So we used skills-based routing again to connect the customer with that team member who was available in that particular product area via live chat. And we saw this phenomenal increase in conversion and in average transaction value when we could connect that customer with the product expert in the store. So that was a really cool experiment. Once stores reopened, that became very difficult to operationalize live chat in a working store environment, because if you've got people on the selling floor looking at their iPhones or their iPads, it looks like they're organizing their weekend out, and they probably are in most circumstances. So, and again, there's the juggle between how do I serve the customer online or the customer in store? And, you know, you can make yourself available or unavailable, but it was really tricky and we just couldn't nail it very well. And I know a lot of other retailers have been struggling with that. And the other option we tried was putting a couple of people in a back office, but then again, they weren't really being as productive as they could have been. So that was kind of an interesting experiment to run. When we launched asynchronous messaging, that kind of started to unlock some more opportunities. And obviously the customer gets control of the conversation, but so too to a point does the retailer in this context. So we trialed a similar concept over a country road just in the lead up to Christmas, where they had actually come to us and said, look, you know, can we do something about the phones? We can't answer the phones and we're coming into Christmas and it's just stressful. So not only was it stressful for the team members in store, it's stressful for customers who couldn't get through, and stressful for the contact center team, because the customers would ring the contact center team going, I can't get through to the store. What's going on? And we go, oh, well, we can't get through to them either, you know. So we worked with them to say, well, let's try this. So it was a bit ballsy. We unpublished all of the Country Road store phone numbers from the website and replaced it with the customer service text number. And so customers would then, when we kind of forced them through to that text messaging channel, and likewise, if they did try to ring a store, we'd divert them through to text as well. And then it was the contact center team that would triage those inquiries. And they were typically inquiries like, do you have this in stock, or how much is this item, whatever. About 70% of those inquiries, the contact center team could actually triage without actually having to put the customer through to the store. So automatically we saw this benefit where the customer could get the answer to her inquiry without having to try multiple times to ring the store to get her call answered. And we were relieving that pain point for the team members in stores. And then fortuitously at the same time, the Country Road store teams were given iPhones to coincide with the launch of an app. And so we had the messaging app that we used had an iPhone app. So we gave the teams access to that. And again, where a customer did need to be put through to a store, we could then assign that conversation with all of the context to the right team member in the right store. So, you know, did we nail it 100%? No. But it was interesting. When we reviewed after the Christmas period with the store teams, you know, they said, we don't want to go back. We think this is the right thing. Let's keep working on it and fine-tuning it and making that experience better. So to answer your question, it really is about, well, helping the customer. She'll want to go on different journeys. She might start in store. She might start at the contact center. She might start online. But then she'll probably have other requests or needs for information on the way. And just how do we help break down those silos between the store, the contact center, and the customer to help that customer get the information she needs and speak to the right person with the right information. And ultimately one day, we could probably do it today, starting to get AI to really actually start answering most of those questions as well, so that we're really facilitating that process. Because the interesting thing is customers are ready. They're saying to us, why can't I pay for this whilst I'm chatting? You know, why do I have to go into a store to pay for it? Can't I do that? Or can't I put it on hold through live chat and then, you know, you can just send it to me later? It's like, oh, that'd be really cool if we could do it. So she's already expecting, you know, some really great customer experiences, and it's up to retailers now to kind of keep up with where customers' expectations are.
That's great. Thanks, Dan. And you gave us some really good case studies, examples of how you guys did it. So you've answered a couple of our other questions before we got to them, which is great. We do have a couple more questions around omnichannel that we want to fire at you, and then we'll get into the final thoughts. So first one is, what are the biggest benefits for contact centers or for organizations in leveraging omnichannel experiences?
Very good question. I think ultimately it's really about revenue. And what I was able to prove in my time at DJs and CRG was, particularly through live chat and also through asynchronous messaging, when you converse with a customer who's browsing online, you're more likely to encourage her to buy something. So conversion goes up, and it can be 5 or 6 times a control group, if not more. And if you proactively engage with that customer rather than reactively, conversion is even higher. Average transaction values are much higher with customers that engage with a customer service or contact center team member than customers that don't. So logic tells you, well, if we can engage with more customers whilst they're browsing online, we should be able to sell more product to them. So, you know, that's no-brainer number one. And then in terms of that complete omni-channel, and I guess omni-channel, you can talk about it two ways, talk about different channels in terms of contact, but also in a retail context, that stores versus online. You've got team members who in stores, they're not always productive all of the time. You know, first thing in the morning, there aren't very many customers. Lunchtime, they're probably busy. In the afternoon, there's probably a lull again. You know, if you've got an omni-channel conversational commerce experience, you can leverage that availability so that when the contact center's under duress, maybe a team member in store can pick up some of those inquiries whilst, you know, they've got the capacity to do so. So, you know, on the one hand, you've got a revenue opportunity. On the other hand, you've got a productivity / cost opportunity. Put those two together and it's a really, really powerful combination. And, you know, my experience as well has been that you can talk about creating great customer experiences, and that's really important, but at the end of the day, Exco, they're interested in that, but, you know, they're not remunerated on that. They're remunerated on sales and profit and cost. And so by looking at how the contact center can actually drive revenue, I think that's probably the much more important way to go about it. And as customer service professional, if I can call myself that, we tend to be, you know, nice and warm and fuzzy and want to create great experiences. We need to have a much more commercial mindset, because that's going to raise the profile of the contact center in the organization. And it should be, the profile of it should be raised, because there's so much opportunity for it to actually help drive success of organizations, and there's a lot of untapped potential there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think it's a matter of, because, you know, customer experience by extension leads to that revenue generation. And I think it's a matter of how do you kind of translate that customer experience that you'll enhance into revenue. And that's what I'm hearing here. And so I love that you're just touching on a few, I think, tips now. What are your biggest tips for contact centers looking to improve their omni-channel experience?
I think the first one is to listen to what the customers are saying. And when I say that, again, you know, it's listen to them about what their expectations are about how they want to interact with your brand. And you may not be able to deliver it straight away. You know, there may be a bit of the art of the impossible there. But again, it can give you an idea of the pathway that you need to go down, because she's probably now thinking ahead about, you know, wouldn't it be cool if I could just ask Siri to buy something and have it delivered to me straight away? Okay, let's see if we can figure out parts of that component and work our way to achieving that. So I think that'd be the first one. But then ultimately is look at really seeing how you can maximize the number of proactive engagements that you have with customers. And again, if I think back to when I first took on the role with DJs and Country Road Group, we didn't proactively engage with customers at all. It was wait for them to come and tell us their feedback. or ask about their order. And David Jones had been using LiveChat for probably about 8 or 9 years. We were kind of early in the game, but we didn't really do very much with it. We'd have maybe one person on it and maybe two. And if the phones were busy, we'd take that person off LiveChat and put them on the phone. So I don't know what we were doing there, but certainly with when we went into lockdown, we saw this, you know, I think it was a 700% increase in the number of phone calls we were getting overnight. We saw that opportunity to leverage live chat and the productivity gains that go with it. But not only was it a more productive channel, it actually unlocked this opportunity for us to help customers with their decision making, with their consideration process, to actually help them purchase something online. And that really then started raising that profile of the contact center within the organization. And by the time I'd finished up with CRG, we actually were starting to not talk about email time to reply or average handling time or anything like that. The weekly contact center report would lead with, this is how much revenue we generated last week. And that was the kind of story that people were interested in. And it was, you know, you'd rather talk about the sales that you made than the number of complaints that you resolved, right? It's kind of an more interesting thing to talk about. So that would be the main thing. Look at how you can actually change that relationship with the customers and engage with them proactively. And you can, you know, obviously technology can help do a lot of that heavy lifting and initiate the conversation with the customer on live chat, for example. And it's a really powerful tool. And it will not only create that great customer experience, but also help create a more productive contact center as well.
Beautiful. Dan, we're going to wrap things up now. So I want to get into final thoughts. Mm-hmm. These are two questions that we ask all of our guests. So first one is, if you could change one thing about the contact center industry, what would it be?
I think it is a real shame that contact centers and contact center as a career is not as well regarded as it should be in Australia. I think it's slowly starting to change, but I think there's still certainly a long way to go. And, you know, leading a contact center, I relied on students and people transitioning through and kind of, you know, it was accepted. But if we can make contact centers more compelling places to work, then that could really revolutionize that whole industry. And one of the things I, you know, conversations we were having was the role of the contact center. We saw it was changing and we were becoming this revenue generating center. And we should think about the contact center as a store, because that's what it kind of is now. We've got salespeople here, but they're not being remunerated the same way that a salesperson in a store is. They didn't get, you know, the same opportunities to kind of get the same commission and stuff, or they didn't get the same product training. So we kind of said, maybe we should change that. So I think that's a really important thing. And the other bit, you know, is obviously there's still great incubators for talent, but can we still keep some team members in store? So if we can change that, I think that'd be a real win-win for everybody.
That's great, Daniel. I'm like completely aligned with you here when we talk about, you know, the future of contact centers is it's going to be their value centers, and you're giving us a sneak peek into that. On the topic of future of contact centers, we'd love to hear from you. If you had a crystal ball, what do you think the future of contact center looks like?
I was thinking about this, and to me, it's almost like they can become almost like the central nervous system of an organization. And if you think about it, often it's the customer's first point of contact, or maybe not necessarily always the first point, but an early point of contact with an organization. We have so much information about the customers available at our fingertips, you know, how often they shop, where they live, you know, all of that sort of stuff, their sentiment. So we've got this rich source of information. It's still not being utilized, I don't think, as well as it could be in many companies. You know, certainly I know there were opportunities at David Jones and Country Road Group, but from what I've been hearing with from colleagues in other organizations, it's a similar story. But again, if we can help facilitate those connections for the customer with the right parts of the organization and the right people in the organization, it's almost like, you know, a kind of like a traffic control center, but in a meaningful way. So I think it will be considered more important and rather as a we'll just shove contact center and put in the marketing function, or, you know, okay, we've got to cut salaries, or, you know, let's just cut it from customer service. Actually thinking, okay, how do we keep investing in the contact center and really seeing it help grow our business? So that's where I really love it to be.
You're speaking to the converted here. Arnie and I love both of those. And I think, yeah, that's the mission we're on as well, is to have contact centers positioned as a really strategic value enabling part of the business. And you're right, there's so many people that come through contact centers. You know, like you're a great example, actually. You kind of, and Arnie is too, actually, people who didn't expect themselves to have a career in contact centers, but fell into them and then found that they loved it. So it's been fantastic talking to you about that. And I love the demystifying of the contact center bingo word, seamless omnichannel experience, because if I had a dollar for every time I've heard that and said it, I wouldn't need to do this podcast, I'll tell you that much. So thank you for making that all make sense for us. I think the listeners will really love that.
And thanks so much, Ken.
It's been great to see you again. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, look, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and great to chat. And hopefully I didn't waffle on too much, but just such an interesting area. So it's great to be able to talk about it to anybody, actually.
Well, your passion comes through. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel.
Excellent. No worries. Thanks, honey.
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
This podcast is produced by Callo, where art and science come together to turn interactions into experiences.
If you're interested in how Callo can help you, head to our website at calloconsulting.com.au.
The Calling was produced with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative.
So you don't miss an episode of The Calling, don't forget to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And please leave a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho. And we'll catch you next time on The Calling.